the 26th, but I got to say that anything this obvious makes us nervous when you say until the date on which we adjourn, sign, you die, you can't do something.
Might be tomorrow.
Yeah.
No, this is the next session.
Oh, this is the next session?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, well, then that's good enough. You know, I know we draft things around here to say after we go home, you guys can do anything you want. Anything as obvious as saying when we sign, you die, right on the page.
It was intended to give the next legislative assembly an opportunity to act on the task force recommendations.
Okay, all right, thanks.
All right. Using?
I have no comments with you, Mr. Quinn.
I like his testimony.
Not short.
All right. Okay, more, Bob?
No, that's it. Thank you very much for...
All right. Okay.
Can you,
do we have any, this is not a public hearing anyhow, it's a work session, all right. Steve, did you want to come? And Department of Energy? All right.
For the record, Mr. Chairman, my name is Steve Marks, I'm the governor's senior policy advisor. With me is John Savage, Oregon Department of Energy Director. I just want to briefly give you the governor's assessment of the amendments that have been proposed and what his concerns are. The first interest the governor has is in the public interest in the siting of facilities. However that may be expressed, as you know, there is a controversy about how the need for power standard has been applied, and we believe that the task force, given the charge of looking at what the proper role of expressing the public interest in energy facility siting, is a very important role, and wanted to iterate that to you. He does have some outstanding questions about the two-year moratorium on the need for power standard. Specifically, how much development can we expect and what constraints will be in place during that time period. So we'll be looking for additional input and information about that, looking at what plans are on the shelf, the timing of processing, site and review, how long that takes, the availability of other supply in the region, and the ability to negotiate gas contracts, obtain financing, etc. Having said that, the governor believes the amended bill is a vastly improved bill. And I guess the one last point that I would make is that whatever we do, it's critically important to the governor that the framework of the legislation move the issue forward so that we can get to some stable resolution of how the public interest is expressed in the siting of these facilities. With that, I just want to add my view of what this is. I believe this is a framework for resolution. The governor does have an outstanding question that we'll be looking at, but having gone over this several times, I think short that data on what that gap looks like and what the risk is associated with the two-year moratorium, I think this is the framework that's in place, and the governor will be looking at the information on what that means, the two-year moratorium.
In regard to your the governor's concern about what was coming online or in the next 2 years, you heard from the what was said earlier, did you? Does that sort of answer it?
I believe we'd like to look at more information, but certainly there is both a theoretical hole and then there's also a practical hole, and you'd like to get a better sense of what it means in real terms, what it means in megawatts of energy developed in Oregon if we do this.
Okay. Any questions of Steve? All right. Do you want to add anything?
Nothing to add, Mr. Chairman.
All right. And I...
I have a question. Do you think this is a vastly improved bill as when we began to negotiate?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Dwyer, yes, I think that there's...
Would you state your name for the record, please?
Oh, Mr. Chairman, for the record, I'm John Savage, Acting Director of the Oregon Department of Energy. The bill restores, I think, a number of and addressed a number of the concerns that I had in my earlier testimony before the committee. I think at issue, of course, is a centerpiece of the need for facility standard. We recognize there are disagreements reasonable people can disagree on this fundamental issue. We land on one side, but we think that this could be a good approach for dealing with it. I want to echo, I think one is that we want a long-term, I think we share with everybody here shares that we want a long-term resolution to what's the proper role of energy facility siting in this state.
Yes. And you don't believe your knowledge that this two-year window is going to result in any more than was previously testified to?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Dwyer, inherently I can't, being an old forecaster, I know the only thing I know about forecasts is that they're always wrong. David's, I thought, assessment of what would happen plus some of the provisions on the timing of this bill that plants, power plants that are under review could still have a need for power standard applied for them, limits what kind of development that we could see occurring here in the state.
Mm-hmm. Senator Brakey?
I'm sorry, that based on the provision of this bill, the need for power standard, you have until the sine die of the 1997 legislature, that it would revert back to the old standard. Power plant applicants who were under review at that time then may be subject or could likely be subject to that need standard, in which case, for that subset of time, going all the way back to when the initial applications, that a need standard still could be applied to those facilities.
Thank you.
Okay. Senator Hartung, any questions?
Nope.
You're okay. Well, are we ready to move the dash to amendments then?
I'd move the dash to amendments.
Let's see. We got amendments some first. Amendments to the amendments, don't we?
Yeah. Keep, yeah, the pages, there's only two of them, isn't
there? Only two of them.
Let's see. Let Bruce run us through them here.
There are two amendments to the dash two amendments, and they're on page 25 and page 46.
All right. Okay. Any objection to adoption of those?
Mr. Chair, I move we amend line 4 of page 25 of the dash 2 amendments to read after the word safety and for the time of completion of construction, comma.
And page 46.
You want to do that one first? Or?
Well, let's do them together.
Okay. Mr. Chair, I move that on page 46 of the dash 2 amendments on line 21, before the word apply, we insert the phrase, except with regard to a nuclear or coal facility, comma.
Okay, any objection to either of those? So ordered.
Mr. Chair, I move the Senate Bill 951 as amended to the floor to pass recommendation.
Wait, we got to move the amendments.
Oh, we got to put those in there. All right.
All right. Move the dash two amendments.
Gutting stuff the bill actually by supplementing the dash two amendments for the bill, moving the dash two amendments into the bill.
As amended.
All right. Any objection? All right. Now we're ready to move the bill.
Okay. I'll move Senate Bill 951 as amended to the floor. Do pass recommendation.
Okay. Any discussion? Question? Oh. Yes, go ahead. All right.
I'd like to just say it looks like from where I'm sitting, a lot of revisions, a lot of discussion, a lot of negotiation have gone on in the last few days. So thanks to all those people who are part of that. So I'm going to make a vote, and I know vote will come up. But today, I just wanted to be able to say that I want to spend time with these revisions, and that I want to have the ability to change my vote.
All right. All right. That's all that's permitted, and you appreciate your telling us. All right, clerk, please call the roll.
Aye, with the same reservation.
All right.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion is passed, and we send this bill to the floor. Anybody want to carry it?
No.
Anybody have time to study it enough to be able to answer questions?
I guess I will. I'll talk to him. I'll talk to him about it. If not, I'll carry it then.
You might ask him.
All right. Okay. And let's see, we'll close the work session on Senate Bill 951.
We get rid of the whole room now.
The damage was...
No, there's gonna be a few people left for this.
All at once, we should also start with, I'll show you what Captain put in. Well, they wanna, I agree with you, they wanna say why it's important to have the discussion, then have official wildlife talk.
All right. Well, how long are they gonna do this?
I'm hoping they're gonna keep it less than 10 minutes.
All right. Maybe I'll tell them that.
I didn't realize it, but once you turn around, that other logger lady's on there. You either...
They wanna tell us why we need this, huh? All right. We should have gone out ahead of time.
Yeah.
Next item on our agenda is an informational meeting about the habitat. Let's see, get the right terminology here. The
resource damage rules.
Huh?
Resource damage.
Resource damage rules that have been proposed by the department. I think the order will be: we'll have some of the interested parties come just briefly to state the issue as they see it, and then we'll have the department address the issue. They've had some questions sent to them. And so first I'll call for Terry Witt, Catherine Venata, and Sharon Beck, and Bill Ferry. And if you could limit this to, can you do it in 10 minutes?
You know, all four of us?
Yeah. Is that asking too much? I hope not.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, we'll try. My name is Terry Witt with Oregonians for Food and Shelter. I did attend the March 22nd Fish and Wildlife Commission meeting where the proposed rules were going to be adopted. I think our concern from a natural resource user representative perspective is centers around a number of issues, but primarily centers around the process that was used to generate these proposed rules. And that process, part of the concern is over proper representation on the advisory committee that was used to draft these rules. We strongly believe that to get a workable set of rules that impact, have the potential to impact natural resource users to the extent that these rules do, that you do need to have proper representation of the stakeholders at the at this or in this process. I think as the committee has been provided with, is number one is a copy of the Citizens Advisory Committee that was used, established by the commission to develop these draft rules. And I think it's rather interesting that of the 9-member Citizen Advisory Committee, 5 of those members were state agency personnel. 3 of the 9 members resided in the state of Washington, and the lone representative that was indicated as being the industry representative was in fact a lawyer with an organization that many of the people within the industry question its ability to represent industry. Industry had no say-so in choosing the lone representative on the committee. and halfway through the process, or partially through the process, this individual that was representing industry moved to the state of Montana and continued to act as the industry representative on this advisory committee. Somehow, I think we are in serious error if we put together citizens advisory committees and do not have the affected stakeholders involved. The other issue that I think is very, very critical is that these rules go shift substantially from what I would consider to be a restorative approach dealing with natural resource damage based upon real impacts to an approach which is very punitive in nature and gives the agency an opportunity to take action against natural resource users based upon things other than real and measurable impact. One of the things which is very apparent if you read the proposed rules in detail is that they establish a mechanism by which full restoration costs are assessed against the responsible party, and by full restoration costs we are now talking about any damage to fish and wildlife and habitat, as well as administrative costs, legal costs, monitoring costs, all of the costs associated with returning both the wildlife and the habitat back to its original condition. In addition to that, these rules would establish, in fact, a mechanism for assessing a passive use or non-use value in addition to full restoration cost. But yet the commission is stating that the purpose of this is not to be punitive. We see no way that it can be anything but punitive if it goes above and considerably beyond the full cost of restoring the environment to its original state. We think the process is extremely flawed and did not do an adequate job of representing those who are the major stakeholders, as well as those people who apparently want to put together a more draconian process by which natural resources users can be, in fact, punished. I'll leave that and leave it here and let Sharon take up from there.
Sharon, go ahead.
My name is Sharon Beck. I'm a rancher from Northeast Oregon and represent the Oregon Cattlemen's Association here today. The Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife stated the purpose for this this administrative rule change to update and clarify the rules to make it fair and equitable and to make it objective rather than subjective. We feel that it fails miserably on all three of those accounts. It makes it less subjective and it doesn't clarify it at all and makes it extremely unfair. We've studied these amendments. We don't think that there's a need, essentially, for the amendments, certainly not the ones that they've proposed. And if there is a need for a change, we should go back to the law and change it and make it less punitive. We believe that they're counterproductive to good relationships with Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife or our industry, and to responsible land management. And I guess our main question is that in the law, which they said was changed in or was adopted in 1979, we fail to see statutory authority for using affected habitat rather than damaged habitat. We don't see the statutory authority for just affected. So we oppose the administrative rules.
Great. Thank you, Sharon.
For the record, I'm Bill Perry, a Director of Governmental Affairs to the Oregon Farm Bureau, and two, we are opposed to the rules. I kind of fell asleep at the switch, and I found out about these from some of my members, along with Sharon and a few other, called me, and they were concerned about the advisory committee, as was raised by Mr. Witt, but also I had one of our legal interns, once I got a copy of the rule, look at the rules, and their ability to attain costs and different things are very wide open, so wide open that I think you could drive a truck through them, and most of them, And depending on where they reference statutes, there is some things in there for joint and several liability, which also scares a lot of our membership without some restrictions to their ability to attain these costs. But our members basically feel that they have authority right now if fish or wildlife is killed or damaged to achieve some of these retribution, and the Department of Environmental Quality has some sort of cleanup statutes and rules, so they didn't really see a need why these rules need to be dealt with at all. With that, I'll let Catherine go.
For the record, I'm Catherine Venata with the Northwest Pulp and Paper Association, today representing Oregon Mills, consisting of Boise Cascade, James River, Pope and Talbot, Georgia Pacific, Simpson Paper Company, and Weyerhaeuser. What I'm handing you is a letter that we submitted for into the public process on the rulemaking back on March 20th, asking for requesting that the department and the commission defer any final action on the proposed rules at this time, and that the department should reconvene the working group with a more diverse membership, which includes representations from all the major impacted interests. And as we noted in our letter, we received these rules at the association on February 23rd and were unable to provide meaningful comment by the February 28th deadline. And these are the comments that we gave by March 22nd hearing, asking for the issue to be deferred. We would ask that this committee would listen to the rules and listen to the department's explanation of them, and seriously consider looking back at the rule-making process, what took place, who was represented, and asking the department to step back and start over and assess all the options, including perhaps not going through this rulemaking process. Thank you for your time.
Any questions of any of the panel? All right. Thank you very much. Who's going to represent the department? Rod or Jill or both?
I would think so. This is a pretty schlocky outfit. Yeah.
Mr. Chair, we have a overhead presentation of the rules. Would the committee like to see that?
All right.
Okay.
It
doesn't take very long.
Doesn't take very long. All right. Yeah, that
and
might
it's,
be.
And it's our explanation of the process, and we'll, I think, answer some of the questions that were raised.
All right. It'll help answer the questions we're for it.
No, it's just the two of us.
You guys want to move to the right wing?
I'm going to go. I'm going to leave.
We need you.
You don't need
we need your valued opinions, your questions.
I've got all the answers here.
All right. Are you satisfied?
My name is Jill Zarnowitz with the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I already gave my name for the record. I'd like to introduce some of the people that have been working on the rules. One person is not here. She's on medical leave right now, and that's Cheryl Kuhn from the Attorney General's office. Replacing her is Jane Ard from the Attorney General's office, who will also be making part of the presentation today. Stephanie Birchfield is a staff member, and Greg Robard, and Greg Robard, and Chris Carter from our department. And the department is here today at the invitation of the committee, as you mentioned. We would like to provide you information on the natural resources losses rules that the department is amending. We understand that the committee has heard a lot of concern, and you heard some concern just now, by various interests. We believe that these rules are not needed, or that they have specific problems with the rules, and we hope to address that during this presentation. The department is in a public involvement process right now with our commission. Just wanted to make you aware of that on these proposed rules, and the rules have not yet been adopted by the commission. First, we'd like to explain something about the rules, the statutory basis of the rules, what the rules themselves are about, why we are revisiting the rules. There were rules adopted in 1991. And the public process that we initiated, and then get into some of the concerns.
Thank you. For the record, I'm Jane Ard with the Attorney General's Office. I just wanted to give you a quick overview of what the statute that we're dealing with does and what the department's authority is. The statute we're dealing with is ORS 468B060. That's a statute found in DEQ's authority, but what it does is authorize the Department of Fish and Wildlife to recover for fish or wildlife that are injured or destroyed, and for the cost of restoring fish and wildlife production, which specifically includes habitat restoration. And broken down into sort of its key elements, and there are several listed on the slide here, I would break it down into about four. One would be that we're talking about pollution events here. Pollution is defined in ORS 468 DEQ statute as an alteration of the physical, chemical, or biological properties of water. So we're only talking about water pollution here. We're also talking about a strict liability crime, or not crime, excuse me, strict liability for those folks who happen to pollute. They're strictly liable for the value of the fish and wildlife and all restoration costs. This means that responsible parties have to pay for the fish and wildlife they destroy or injure, plus the cost of restoring that production of those fish and wildlife. Finally, the damages that the department collects are deposited into the Fish and Wildlife Fund and are used for restoration.
Mr. Chair, do I understand that? Yeah. I understand that correctly, that the money that is collected under this program goes into something
right.
that the department has
right.
control
over? Right, it goes
over?
To the Fish and Wildlife Fund. Right.
Okay.
The department does have other statutory authority to recover damages for fish and wildlife. The first would be under ORS 496705 and another statute that's not listed up there, 506720. Those are what we refer